Hello, everyone. Welcome to JTalk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and again, I'm joined by John Steele. John, how's it going?
Hi, Stu. Very good, thanks. The runaway train is hurtling towards the buffers in J1 and J2 and J3, isn't it?
Yeah, easy, Tiger. Easy. We don't want to encroach on Sam and John's patch. Sam and Ben's patch. Oh, we've had a good start here. Anyway, we're going to talk about the J2 and J3 promotion races. We are somewhat closer in time to the finish, but no closer to actually knowing who's going to kind of go up. Nothing was finalized this weekend in either league. And so we're going to talk about those promotion races in due course. I think the first thing we need to do, John, is to just basically have a quick kind of browse across the virtual newspapers, because there are a couple of bits of, I would call them juicy bits of gossip from the Japanese media this morning involving teams and high profile people in J2 especially. The first one was that Peter Utaka, the league's top goal scorer, currently on the books of Kyoto Sanga, he is being marked for a move to Ranko Popovic's Machida Zelvia next year. Machida are obviously backed by Cyber Agent, and this year has been really disappointing, I think, from a performance point of view for Machida. So bringing in someone with the proven goal-scoring quality of Peter Utaka would be kind of a no-brainer, I think, for Machida. The second piece of interesting gossip was that Avispa Fukuoka manager Shigetoshi Hasebe has been linked with the manager's job at Vissel Kobe. Vissel, who reached the semi-finals, was it semi-finals? Yeah, of the Asian Champions League before they were knocked out on penalties last night, I think it was. Currently, Atsushi Miura is in temporary charge there, but Shigetoshi Hasebe is an old Kobe player, and he's done really, really well in the past 2 years. Obviously, he did really well with Mito, and Fukuoka are closing in on J1. John, those two pieces of, I don't want to say news, they are just kind of gossip at the moment, but they're interesting potential moves, aren't they?
They really are. I think on the Utaka one, you can totally see how that makes sense for Machida and Ranko Popovic, and I'm sure Machida supporters would be absolutely delighted and very excited if this was to become a reality. I think it was interesting that you mentioned Zelvia being backed financially by Cyber Agent, because apart from, you know, taking a controlling interest in the club, I don't think they have really fronted much money for players.
That's true.
In fact,
that's true, yeah.
That was one of the problems with the squad this year, that it was reliant on some very exciting young players who were a bit inconsistent, and then very, very senior players, if we're being kind, if we're being fair, and some disappointing and cheap foreign signings. So what I would see, if that move does come off and Utaka does come, first of all, his wages will be big, so it would be a statement of intent from Machida, from Cybridge. But I wonder if which other players will come in as well, because it might signal a kind of more wholesale rebuilding of the squad. But I don't think Utaka himself would be able to pull Machida, you know, that much higher up the table, although obviously his goals would help. So I'd be really interested to see who comes with him, if it comes off. On Hasebe, it's no surprise to see managers doing well at the top of J2 being linked with jobs in J1, I suppose. Being a sort of J2 cheerleader, if you like, if that's not too horrible an image, I do think it's a bit worrying medium term if we think that we've had rumours that Ricardo Rodriguez from Tokushima is going to go to Urawa. And if Hasebe does end up moving to Kobe, which I think is just rumour at the moment, it's kind of a worrying trend to see managers, you know, take their teams into J1 but then be poached or moved before they've even had a chance to, you know, to continue the coaching of the teams they've got promoted with. So I don't know what the answer to that is, really, other than I wonder if we see a slight widening of the the gap, you know, in terms of J1 and J2. I think maybe in previous years, managers who coached a J2 team to promotion maybe would want to stay and have at least one season with their promoted team, you know, with the boys. But yeah, maybe the Urawa job and the Kobe job, they're big jobs, aren't they? I don't think you can say no to them.
I think what I'd say is that like Hasebe, if he takes Fukuoka into J1, his stock probably won't get much higher, I wouldn't have thought, because you think that there'll be a relegation festival from J1 next year, and he'll do well to keep Fukuoka up. And I, as much as I like Rodriguez, I think he would find it difficult to keep Tokushima up as well. And so really, my gut feeling is that these managers are cashing in. Cashing in is a poor phrase. But they are.
Well, they're cashing in their reputation stuff. Yeah, not financially. They're cashing in financially. Yeah.
Exactly. They are leveraging themselves at their highest point, because getting promotion, possibly promotion from J2 to J1. And it's, I mean, if Hasebe stays at Fukuoka next year and they finish bottom of the league, is he ever going to get a chance to manage a club with the resources that Vissel Kobe have? It's a very, it's an easy question to answer in the negative. And so why wouldn't he? Why wouldn't he have a look at this job? And it's the same for Rodriguez, actually. Who's got the higher ceiling, Tokushima or Urawa? I mean, it's very cold to think about it as a J2 and J3 observer, but those are the things that he has to consider, and that Hasebe has to consider as well. But hopefully they can focus on their jobs, because, like I mentioned in the intro, nothing is finalized at the moment, John. We thought we might have some clarity this weekend in J2, but as you quite rightly point out in the notes that you sent, the J2 Champions Shield was at Tokushima Vortices Stadium, but they weren't able to hoist it at the end of the game because they drew 0-0. With Jeff United, which was a little bit of a surprise result. We're not worrying too much about the Maui, because they just need one point from the last two games, given that their goal difference is much better. But it's slightly annoying that they didn't get it done, right?
Yeah, I think the performance and result of this game was a little bit more concerning than the defeat at Mito in the previous round. And what I mean by that is that although they lost at Mito and drew against Jeff, against Mito they created loads of chances. You know, Yuki Kakita missed the penalty, and I think Atsushi Ikata hit the post, didn't he, late on in that game. Tokushima created a lot of chances but just couldn't take them in that game against Mito. Whereas against Jeff, I mean, I watched the highlights, but there wasn't really enough. There weren't really any too many clear-cut chances from either side. You know, Tokushima didn't create as much as you'd expect. And I wonder if they were a little bit caught between two stools. You know, they didn't really need to go crazy chasing that game and push for a winner and leave themselves potentially open to, you know, a sucker punch on the counter-attack. But that kind of left them sort of in no man's land a little bit in terms of tactics, I think, especially in the second half. So no reason to panic. And as you mentioned, I feel the same. I think if they can just pick up one point from the last two games, then that'll be enough for them to go up. With the caveat that their last game is away at Fukuoka, and I'm sure Ricardo Rodriguez and his men will not want to go to Fukuoka needing anything. So that puts a little bit of pressure on the game that they have coming up on Wednesday against Omiya, I think.
Yeah, speaking of Fukuoka, they did close the gap to Vortis to just 3 points after they beat Kyoto Sanga at the Best Denki Stadium. Goals in the second half from Emil Salomonsson, who's been absolutely outstanding this year on loan from Sanfrecce Hiroshima. He scored about 15 minutes into the second half, and then Daya Tono, who's also on loan from Kawasaki Frontale, smashed in a goal off the underside of the crossbar. This potentially, I think I said in the previous pod last Friday, this was potentially a tricky opponent for Fukuoka, but I think from the highlights that I saw, I know Utaka had a chance in the first half that he pulled just wide, but the desire and the meaning of the game for Fukuoka nullified any kind of threat from Kyoto, and basically Fukuoka did what they had to, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think just looking at the kind of reaction from Fukuoka fans that we follow, you know, on social media, on Twitter, for example, this was a really, really good team performance from them. They restricted Kyoto to the absolute bare minimum of chances. As you mentioned, Utaka had that one chance right at the end of the first half, but that was about it. And I also thought an impressive thing was how patient Fukuoka were. You know, they had to wait a long time to make the breakthrough, the 63rd minute with Salomonsson, and they were helped a little bit by some, I thought, poor goalkeeping from Keisuke
Shinzu. I thought it was poor. Yeah, and it's not the first time that... it's not the first time we've mentioned Keisuke Shimizu and poor goalkeeping on this podcast.
It's a hard low shot, but I thought he could have made himself. I mean, obviously I'm no goalkeeper, but he could have made himself a bit bigger, I think, maybe. But yeah, it was a good goal. But once that breakthrough came and Fukuoka could relax a bit more, Daya Tono absolutely spanking a shot in off the underside of the bar for 2-0 shortly afterwards. And it could have been 3. Asahi Masayama just couldn't stretch enough to get on the end of a cross from Kennedy Ebersmikuni at the end. So I think a really encouraging performance from Fukuoka, and probably a good indicator of how far Kyoto are off, you know, promotion level at the moment. And Fukuoka, eight games unbeaten now and playing well. I think that would have been a big confidence boost, and the clean sheet's important as well, because obviously they let in 2 goals, didn't they, against Kanazawa at home in the previous game. So no negatives for Fukuoka, I don't think, from this one.
Well, they've got a nice little trip to Ehime in midweek, who were just dinked 6-0 by Ryukyu. We'll come on to that a little bit later on. But the third point of this promotion triangle is Viva and Nagasaki, and they're still hanging around, still putting the pressure on, because they won at Ajinomoto Stadium against Tokyo Verde. They won 2-0, two first half goals for Nagasaki. First was a Makoto Kakuda header. When I watched this, and I'm watching this fresh because I only watched it a couple of minutes before we started recording. I don't think he knew what happened in that header. I think he closed his eyes and the ball kind of angled off his head into the top corner, but I'm not really sure that he knew a lot about it. But I don't suppose he really cares, to be quite frank, and nor should he, to be perfectly honest. Nagasaki made it 2-0, and I think we're going to talk about this penalty because I think we might have different opinions on this. There's potential handball, there's a potential foul, but there's nothing to be taken away from Yohei Otake, who flicked the ball up when it came to him and just volleyed it past Mateus. But I think we're looking at the handball from the marauding Nagasaki midfielder Ryoma Kida, who was stumbling in the area, and the ball clearly hit his hand and clearly deflected into the path of Otake, and who went on to score, John. I think we spoke a little bit about this before the recording started. We might have slightly differing views. I think that goal shouldn't have been allowed. And that's nothing to do with Kida gaining an advantage deliberately, because he obviously didn't. He was falling over. He was almost, if not almost, on the floor. If not on the floor, he was almost on the floor. I don't see what he can do with his hand. He just can't do anything. But the way the rules are, the ball hit his hand. It moved into the path of Otake, who did the rest. I don't think it should have been that. I don't think it would have made a difference to the to the eventual outcome of the game, because Verde are poor, and I don't have any sympathy for Tokyo Verde, to be quite honest, this season. But having said that, I don't think it should have been allowed. What say you?
Yeah, this is a really good example of why VAR complicates things, because I'm sure there's lots of different angles, and depending on what speed you sort of play this back at, you might come up with a different interpretation. I think we should mention as well, this game was shown live on YouTube, wasn't it, internationally, for free. So there might be a lot of people who've seen this who can tweet at us and tell us how badly we've got this wrong. Although since we're coming at it from opposite angles, one of us will be will be smug, I suppose. So I think the first thing to say is, yeah, Ryo Makeda, he's dribbling the ball at pace. He comes into the penalty area. He, I think, brushes a clumsy outstretched leg from a Verde player. The contact is very minimal. It probably is enough to knock him off balance and send him flying. But I think he was off balance anyway when he was coming into the penalty area at that point. So you could... there's probably an AI program somewhere that would say that's a penalty, because the Verde player touches him and he goes down, and the Verde player didn't get the ball. I think giving a penalty for that would be extremely harsh, because the contact was so minimal, and I don't think the referee could be sure that it was the contact that sent Keita flying, since he was off balance a little bit already. And I think that's something that I always look for is, referees are supposed to be sure when they give decisions, right? If you're not sure, you're not supposed to give it. So I don't think there's a referee who could be sure that was a foul and sure it was a penalty. It does lead to Ryo Makeda falling over and the ball hitting his arm as he's going down. And I think you're right. I think if we apply the letter of the law, that's a free kick for Tokyo Verde, because it doesn't matter if the handball is accidental or not now. If the ball hits your hand, if it hits a defender's hand in the box, it's a penalty. So if it hits a forward's hand in the box, it should be a free kick. However, I think that's a stupid rule, as we've talked about it, probably in ad nauseum and before we started recording. So I think in the context of, all's well that ends well, Nagasaki were the better side. They deserved to win. They would have won anyway. Verde were poor on the day and they defended this situation poorly anyway. So, I don't think in the context it's such a big deal. I thought taking everything in the round, the goal was okay. But I think it highlights again the fact that the handball rule is too taking intent out of the rule completely is the wrong way to go. And it leads to this situation where defenders are more in danger than forwards of being affected by this rule. Because if a defender, let's say that Keita had bundled his way into a defender, knocked the defender flying, and the ball had hit a defender's arm on the ground, I think if the referee sees that, he gives a penalty. And the way that Japanese referees are, probably got a yellow card as well, into the bargain. So it doesn't seem fair that defenders are kind of on this. They're walking a tightrope every time the ball comes into penalty. Whereas for a forward, if you just handle it, the worst that can happen is the chance goes away and it's a free kick. So I think on this specific incident, by the letter of the law, you're right and it shouldn't have been given. But I think if you look at the whole passage of play in the round, it was okay to give that goal, but I think it's the rule, the issue that we're going to come back to again and again probably until there's a change, is that rule is problematic now.
Oh, definitely. Like, it's there are two for me, there are two separate issues here. It's the rule itself, which is it's bullshit rule, because it forces defenders to become penguins in the area, because they just like hold their hands either at the side or behind them, like they've been arrested, and it's just not good for defenders. But it's the double standard, like you said, when attackers get the benefit of the doubt, that's not fair either. The rule is bad, but the rule is there now, and to be honest, I don't think the referee could have been in a better position to see it. I mean, he must have seen it, and I'm surprised he didn't give it. But I think it wouldn't have changed the ultimate result. And ever since Verde acted like complete knobheads against Ryukyu, I have very little sympathy for them. So you know, all's well that ends well, you know. I think we're all good with that.
I think we do agree then.
Yeah. I just taught myself in a circle again. Imagine that. I often do that. So when we look at the midweek fixtures, we've already kind of run through them just a wee bit. But Tokushima host Omiya Adija at home. Again, I'm sure the trophy will be there. I'm sure that's the pressure that Tokushima needs, seeing the trophy on the sideline waiting to be hoisted up. Fukuoka, we've already said, they make the trip to a very welcoming Ehime FC side. I think the Daitono Juanma, Juanma started on the bench in this game, with his new blonde hair, looks like crap. It really does. I think he's just copied Daisuke Ishizu, which is never a good thing, I think. But yeah, Fukuoka heading to Ehime. Nagasaki welcome Vanfori Corfu to the Transcosmos Stadium. I want to say that all the teams will win, but if you had to choose one that wouldn't, John, who would you choose?
That's a tough question. I knew you were going to ask me, and nobody's going to like this answer, I'm afraid. I think Nagasaki are going to win both of the games they've got left, because they have back-to-back home games, right?
They've got
Kofu on Wednesday, as we mentioned, and then they've got Kanazawa at home. Neither of these teams are bad, clearly, but they don't have the... they don't have the motivation, I don't think, Nagasaki have at this point. And Nagasaki disposed of Tokyo Verde pretty comfortably, pretty easily at the weekend. I think they'll have a lot of energy left in the tank. So I don't think they'll have too many troubles getting rid of Kofu and Kanazawa. Tokushima will go all out to win it against Omiya, I feel, because, they, as I mentioned, they don't want to have to go to Fukuoka needing a point or needing anything. I think they want to go to Fukuoka and basically be, as we say back home, Stu, on the Raz.
Sure. Yep.
So I think Tokushima will go for it against Omiya a lot more than they did against Jeff, and I don't think Omiya will be able to handle that. Certainly, if the defending is of the standard from their away game at Iwata recently, Tokushima will have no problems at all. And we're going to come on to the Ehime's rather disappointing performance at the weekend in a moment. I just think there's. This one, the Fukuoka game away at Ehime, is just wrapped up too neatly with a bow on it for my liking. I think it's very tempting to say that Fukuoka are going to win there and score seven, and Ehime are going to be left, with their, tails even more firmly between their legs than they are already. But you just never know in the J League. You know, it's such a funny league. I can imagine Ehime having a reaction, and don't think that it'll be a strong enough reaction to beat Fukuoka necessarily, but I think they'll push them a lot harder than we might suspect, and I think Fukuoka are going to have to be at it like they were against Kyoto to make sure they get all 3 points, to be honest.
Interesting. So you think Fukuoka will have to bring their A game at the Ninjinia Stadium? That's a bold call. Stand behind that one. That would be a good one. Okay. So those are the three promotion candidates. But there were other teams that took part in games this weekend. Some good, some bad. Okay. Let's just roll. And you've in your notes, you've quite neatly wrapped these up into part one and part two. So. Let's just go with that then. So, other games, part one. I've just realized I'm reading this now, which is I'm not putting my spin on things, so I will put my spin on things, because Vanfori Corfu, they were beaten 1-0 at home by Matsumoto Yamaga, Serginho's goal in the first half, with my selections for goalkeeper of the year, Kosuke Okanishi. As soon as I put my nomination in for him, he does something pretty inexplicable. He fumbles Serginho's cross into the net. Good work, Okanishi, making me look like a bit of a prat for nominating you. But as you say, John, 1-7 for Matsumoto. Next year, promising. We'll come onto that question in a minute. Giovanni Kitakyushu beat Jubilo Iwata 2-0 at home. Akira Disaro, 17 goals for the season. And I don't know if you caught this, John, but I want to say that after his first goal, I thought he did an eagle wing celebration. Now, I can't be certain of that, but he definitely raised his hands in a flying motion. So I wonder if he's looked at my Twitter feed, me calling him the bald eagle, and I wonder if he's...
You think he's doubling down?
Yeah, I wonder if he's saying, well, Stuart's given me a lot of support this year, so I'll... instead of doing that weird thing with his fingers and the mask and whatever it is, if I just bust out the wing celebration, he might make Stuart happy. And you did, Akira. Thank you very much. It was good work. But yeah, he's had a sensational season, Akira Disaro. Absolutely fantastic this year for Giravant. Gunma Zespa came from behind to win 2-1 at Albrecht Niigata. 2 goals early in the second half to see off Niigata. That's a poor result for Niigata, for them. But yeah, Gunma 4 games unbeaten. And finally, in this part one of the roundup, Montelio Yamagata's pretty strong end to the season continues. They kind of sauntered past Fagiano Okayama. 2 goals in the first 20 minutes. Shin Nakamura and Vinicius Araujo. Yeah, he's another one of these players that had a really good season. I want to quote John Steele here. Super footwork. I like that. That's a very fancy description of the goal. 13, unlucky for some, but very lucky for him. Goals for the season. John, out of those 4 games, what do you want to tell me?
Well, you've already mentioned the standout moment of Kosuke Okanishi on that goal.
He's had a good season, but yeah, just like,
yeah,
as soon as you give him a bit of
what
praise.
He was trying to do. Yeah, I just wasn't sure what he was trying to do there, because was he trying to catch the ball or punch it away? I guess we'll never know. That was disappointing. And I think you can see maybe Kofu just running out of steam a little bit at this point. I'm sure, like us, Stu's a lot of very tired legs and tired minds out there at the moment. I think you're right to highlight Akira Disaro. It's funny, I think, because Giravant's Kitu Kyushu was so good early on in the season, they're going to end up not getting as many sort of gongs or plaudits for kind of, you know, players of the season, managers of the season. At the end, just because they've been fourth for so long, or fifth, you know, for so long, that we just kind of forgot about them almost.
Yeah.
It's a bit like when a really, really good film comes out right at the start of the Oscars cycle, and then by the time the voting actually comes out, everyone's forgotten it actually came out this year. Do you get the analogy?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Mm. So, I think we have to give Disaro some love, because he's... he's been explosive. Yeah, you're quite right. Gunma, 4 games unbeaten for them. So good end to the season, I think. And Yamagata, I think you've mentioned they might be a dark horse for next season at the top of the table. I think if they can keep Vinicius Araujo, they'll definitely have a chance again. He's super dangerous. And he very nonchalantly scored that goal, the second one against Yama. But I don't think it was as easy as he made it look. So that's well worth checking out online if you've not seen it.
Yeah, definitely. we'll move on to the rest of the games, and we'll start off in Machida. We've already mentioned them a little bit at the start of this, but they beat Mito Hollyhock 1-0 at home. A very nice goal actually from Mizuki Ando. And yeah, I should have mentioned this at the start as well. Ranko Popovic has signed a contract extension, or it's been announced that he's staying. Whether he signed a longer contract when he was appointed, no one is probably going to know that. But Ranko Popovic will be there in 2021. I'd be interested in your thoughts, John, because just looking from afar, it doesn't look like it's been a very good season for Machida. But yeah, I'll be interested to see to hear your take on that. Tuegan Kanazawa, they drew 1-1 at home with Tochigi. These were both these goals came in the opening 5 minutes, I think. Toi Yamane, who is still on loan from Seretse Osaka. It was a great goal. Crikey. Yeah, it was a really good goal for him. But then, yeah, my man crush, Masaya Tashiro, heading Tochigi to parity. And probably the biggest news from this game is that, Seigen Kanazawa changing from Adidas to Hummel for their 2021 kits. If they're, I tend to think red and black, thinking maybe they might look like Fukushima United's kits, which look pretty damn nice, so they'll be good for Kanazawa. Omiya, they beat Yamaguchi 3-1 at home. I think these were, was it Kurokawa scored, and Kanji Okunuki
scored too.
It's a name like Okunuki is a name that I really kind of expected to hear a lot more of this year. He looked really a dynamite at the end of last year, and for whatever reason, maybe it's symptomatic of the way Omiya.
I think he's been injured. Yeah, like many Omiya players this year.
Exactly. Yeah, I think like the Okunuki story is maybe a microcosm of what's actually happened to Omiya this year. Like high hopes, injuries, taking time to get back in, and hopefully he's back and fully better for next year. I think you do well to highlight Kazuma Takai's goal for Renault for 10th of the year. Reminded, again, I'm quoting John Steele here, reminded me of Cantona against Sunderland in the Premier League. I can see that. Yeah, interesting.
It's because the way it clips the inside of the
post. Yeah.
Way in. Yeah.
It's a no.
I'm not saying he's as good as Cantona.
Yes, you are. That goal. Yes, you are. Okay, before you can reply to that, Takai won't be at Yamaguchi next year. I wouldn't have thought. And finally, Jeff, take it easy, man. Have a seat and just relax and bask in the glow of FC Ryukyu thumping Ehime 6-0. This was quite the game. It was only 1-0 at halftime, actually. Yoshio Koizumi, I think one of the best players in the league this year, and one that Ryukyu will do really well to hold on to this winter. He gave Ryukyu the lead, but yeah, after halftime, Koya Kazama with a hat-trick. Imagine that. And two assists. Crikey. Kazama, when he plays like that, he's not quick, he's not big, he's not tall, he's not physical, but he just gets into those kind of tricky positions, and like he doesn't do it against the top teams often enough, but he's cleverer than your average kind of lower echelon defender, and he just got into all these good positions, and he took advantage. I think his hat trick came in like 15 minutes or so, something like that. And then Keigo Numata, Renikeda, they put Ehime to the sword. And as you quite rightly point out in your notes, John, this is not the first time that Ryukyu have gone balls out, because they've just, I mean, sorry, that was an odd choice of phrase. As you mentioned, like they've beaten Omiya 5-0, Matsumoto 6-1, Ehime 6-0, Verdi 4-0, and they've scored 8 more goals than second place Fukuoka. What do you think, John? What are we looking at with Ryukyu? Why do they have all these goal explosions sporadically?
Really good question. I can't remember if Takuma Abe played in this game. I know he's been out injured for the last couple of rounds, so it'd be even more impressive if they've managed to score 6 without him, because we know what a good finisher, what an important player he's been, earlier in the season. I think, scoring 8 goals more than the second place team that we speak very highly of, Fukuoka, tells you that the problems that Ryukyu have are at the other end of the pitch. Mm. And I think... I believe Danny Carvajal was the substitute goalkeeper for this game, wasn't he? I think, didn't he tweet he just tweeted in Japanese, like, I don't like this.
Yeah. I wonder if he tweeted that from the bench. That would be quite nice.
Yeah. When your team is, I'll keep the balls. When your team is having it off,
yeah.
As Riku against Ahime, to tweet that you're not happy is a brave thing to do, maybe. So you kind of wonder where that leaves Riku goalkeeper wise, because the guys that they've had play instead of him have not looked that great, to be honest, this season. But as defensively, they're in absolute shambles, aren't they? Lee Yong-jik, who I really like as a player, but has just been hung out to dry repeatedly by being asked to play at centre back, which is just not his best position at all. In fact, he's probably he'd probably be better off in goal than at centre, because he wouldn't have to worry about positional sense so much. Mm. He's very bad at. I think it's Ryoji Fukui.
Yep,
is there as well, who again is can tackle, but that's about it. And he can't tackle when the player he's marking is 10 yards ahead of him, which happens quite often. Mm. I just think defensively it's been an absolute shit show for Ryukyu. And I was really interested that they're going to stick with their coach, aren't they? Yes, he's Yuchi for next year. I'm sure he's got the remit of do not touch the front six.
Yeah.
Just leave them alone. But can you please do something about the... What happens when the ball goes over the halfway line, basically, towards your goal, because it's been very bad. So, yeah, it's a fascinating conundrum, really, to have a team which is on any given day they can look dysfunctional to the point of making you furious, even if you're not a fan. And then on other times it completely kicks. I mean, Omiya, they beat Omiya 5-0 at home and 3-0 away this season. So I mean, that automatically puts it in the good season category, doesn't it? But then they're only, they're quite near the bottom, aren't they, as well? I think they're not that high up the table. So it's a really weird, I think, as a Ryukyu fan, obviously very satisfied with what happened at the weekend, but satisfied with the season as a whole, and that's a more difficult question to answer. And it's not to take anything away from Ryukyu, but Ehime as well pretty much knocked off after that first Kazuma goal, didn't they?
Yeah.
The one that looked, it might have been offside, and they just weren't really in it after that. So I think Ryukyu did well to keep going and get as many goals as they did, because that game was won at 2-0. But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird, very difficult to predict with Ryukyu. When they play well, they're really good, and then when they have to do a lot of defending, it usually goes very very wrong very quickly.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's never a dull moment in Okinawa, I'll give you that. So we're just going to wrap up, John, this J2 part. I think we've mentioned the key fixtures. I'll just kind of go through them again. Tokushima are hosting Omiya. If Tokushima win, they'll be promoted. Ehime host Fukuoka, and Nagasaki Nagasaki welcome Vamfori Corfu to Nagasaki. Nagasaki must win. If they don't win, Tokushima will be promoted. John, what we're going to do now is we're going to take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, we're going to go over what happened in J3. So take a drink and we'll be back in just a minute.
Hi everyone, hope you enjoyed a short break for refreshments. John Steele here. I'm going to quiz you now, Stu, if that's all right, because you've got the drop on me here. I'm up to speed with the J3 results from the weekend, from round 33, but I haven't actually seen any of the action, so hopefully you can fill me in. Now, the game that we gave the big build-up to in advance, quite rightly, was Nagano against Gifu. So second place against fourth place in the table, this mad old promotion race that we've got going on. Naturally enough, given all the hype we gave it, it finished 0-0. So I know you watched this game in full. So what did you make of it? And is that the end of the road for Gifu for promotion this season?
Yeah, it is. The game itself was actually, it was pretty good for a 0-0. Nagano had probably the better of the first half. They had quite a few, I'd say not full chances, maybe half chances. They got into some good positions, but wasted them. But then after half time, Gifu really kind of kicked in, and I'd even go as far as to say I haven't seen Gifu play that much better this year. They're really good. They're really positive. They're almost camped in Nagano's half for the entirety of the second half. Kensei Nakashima hit the post with a long range effort. Ryochi Maeda had a shot saved by the goalkeeper. Takasaki went down in the box. That might have been a penalty on another day. They had numerous kind of near misses as well, but they just couldn't find the goal that they needed. And Gifu now find themselves 3 points behind Nagano with a much worse goal difference. I think there's a 9-goal difference between the sides. So that would mean, I'm sure we'll come into the permutations, but that would mean Nagano losing 1-0 at home and Gifu winning 8-0 away from home. And it's just not going to happen this year, unfortunately. And there were over 5,500 people there at Nagano. I don't know for a fact, but I'd be surprised if there was a bigger crowd this year in J3. In fact, I'd be almost certain that there wasn't. It's a match that probably wouldn't look out of place at the bottom half of, or towards the bottom third of J2, to be quite frank. But yeah, only one of those teams is going to head to J2 next year, and it's probably going to be the team that we're playing in orange.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we're gonna reconvene for a sort of proper post mortem of the J3 season in due course. I wanted to ask you a little bit about whether you thought coming so close to automatic promotion was actually a pretty good season for Gifu, considering, you know, they changed managers midway through and coronavirus and all the rest of it. But let's save that for a deep dive another time. Give you some time to get your thoughts in order for that one. So if we look at the top of the table, Stu, we know Akita are champions. They're first. It's done and dusted. But they were on the road at the third place team, Sagamihara. So if we look at the standings, you've got Nagano in second, 59 points. Sagamihara third, 1 point further back on 58. And as we've talked about, Gifu 2 points behind them on 56. Now, this game between Sagamihara and Akita finished 1-1. So again, we can big up Sagamihara extending their unbeaten run to, is it 600 games now?
715, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Quite a lot of games since they tasted defeat, but they weren't able to beat Akita in this game. Did you see the highlights? What did you think of the match? And obviously that puts Nagano in the driving seat for the promotion place. As long as they win, the weekend, promotion is theirs for the taking. But what did you make of the match? And what did you make of Sagamihara specifically?
Yeah, well, I watched the second half of this game simultaneously with the first half of the Gifu game, because Sagamihara and Akita kicked off at 1. Nagano and Gifu kicked off at 2. This was a really open game, actually. Both teams were not content just to sit back, and kind of full credit to Akita. They brought themselves to the game. They rested a few players. I don't think Kaito Uchida played. I can't remember seeing that much of Naoguchi. He did play, but he wasn't really influential. But they gave a good account of themselves. They took the lead early on. Shoma Kamata with a header. He beat Victor. And when Akita go in front, they don't tend to get pegged back so often. But Sagamihara did bring themselves level. A really well-worked goal, Ryuji Saito picking up a back heel and slotting the ball into the net. And then for the rest of the game, for the second half in particular, like both teams, they were like boxers who were out on their feet. They were just slugging from one end to the other, but neither side could get the goal, really. And for Sagamihara, we've spoken about this before. They're a difficult evaluation, but they've done really well this year. But you could see at the end of that game that, like, they kind of knew that it will probably be out of their hands, and it is out of their hands as it stands now, because they're going to have to win, and they're traveling to Imabari, so they're going to have to win and hope that Nagano lose, because a draw is not going to be enough for Sagamihara. And it's a rough end to the year, to be quite honest with them. I mean, they've been unbeaten since the summer, but they're still going to finish outside the promotion spots. I think the one thing I would say, I'd be interested to not just hear your thoughts on this, but to kind of hear what the other J League watchers kind of think about this. In the next year, at the bottom of J2, four teams are going to get relegated. And if you ask me to say with any certainty that, for example, Blaublitz Akita and Nagano Parcero will finish outside that bottom four, then I can't say that they will. And I think that these two teams, however good they are this year in J3, they have a high chance of being yo-yo teams. And maybe, just maybe, Sagamihara and Gifu, maybe Kagoshima, who've let their coach go, we'll come on to that. Imabari as well.
They might be dodging a bullet almost, well, by not getting promoted this year.
That's a difficult kind of phrase to pin to it, because like it, that kind of phrasing gives it kind of that they actively tried or actively should not try to get promoted, and I think that's maybe not the way to look at it, but I think that it would be an inadvertent kind of benefit in that they could kind of build on what they've done this year, because yes, Sagamihara, Gifu, Imabari, Kumamoto are the push, Kagoshima are the push, they've done all right, they've unearthed some good players, they've unearthed a system that works for them, and you'd think that if they continue to build, then another year in the system, another year with certain players playing in that system, would stand them in good stead for a promotion next year and into a league where there's only two relegation spots. And so maybe if I was looking for any kind of bright spots, I might think that way. But, you know, teams want to get promoted. Of course they do. But, maybe getting promoted this year is a little bit of fool's gold, because it's going to be very, very, very difficult with the finances the way they are, because obviously teams have had to do this season without a lot of gate receipts and a lot of prize money, and so they're not going to have the same amount of resources to spend, and then so kind of for them staying up would be a big ask next year, I think.
Yeah, I think that's good analysis, and I think for Sagamihara in particular, it's I've started to come to the point of view that they play in a certain way, but I think they're actually a lot better than they look, if that makes any sense.
Because
you don't get 18 games, you don't get to 18 games unbeaten without having something about you, but I think they do tend to play within themselves a little bit, and they almost play in a way that actually hides how skillful some of the players are.
They played really well against Akita. They really gave Akita a good game, and they forced Akita to play well, in all honesty. And I think they are limited, but they do what they do well, and I mean, if they keep players like Romulo, I wonder if any other team... But I think Romulo plays well because he's allowed to play well in that team, if that makes sense.
Yes, he doesn't have to do any defending, does he?
Exactly. If you plonked him in Akita's side, I'm not sure he'd be as good a player as he is with Sagamihara. And so... they played really well, and they are a good team. Like you said, you don't get... you don't get to wear to where Sagamihara in the league without being a good team. The one thing that I forgot to mention when I was talking about Gifu is that against Akita, Nagano and Sagamihara, Gifu have scored 2 goals and conceded 12 this year. So you're not going to get any kind of Gifu supporters saying that Gifu are in a false position, because they're not. And, you know, the old adage, the league table doesn't lie. It doesn't lie for Gifu this year. Like, Sagamihara, Nagano and Akita have outperformed Gifu, and they deserve to be above them.
Okay, it's all good stuff. Yeah, I think these are all good points, and it's going to be very interesting to see what the what kind of market it is in terms of players coming and going from these teams with a promotion push in mind, you know, for next year. But I think we've got that to look forward to, Stu. Another thing we've got to look forward to is the final round of J3 games, right, coming up this weekend on Sunday, round 34. So I think the two big games we have to mention, all the games kicking off at the same time, of course, 1 p.m. for this round. Nagano are hosting Iwate, aren't they, at home again? Nagano need, what do they need? If they win, they're promoted. Is that right? They just need to win.
Yes. If they they need to equal or better Sagamihara's result.
Okay, and Sagamihara, as we've already mentioned, they have a daunting, perhaps is a bit strong, but tricky trip away to a very inform and obdurate opponent in the form of Imabari. So, yeah, it's hard to envisage for me Sagamihara getting the 3 points easily from that game. I think Sagamihara will probably score one, because they always score one. But how many more they'll get, or if they can keep Imabari out, is another question. How do you see it going on the final day, Stu? So Nagano against Iwate, Imabari against Sagamihara. What's going to happen?
Yeah, well, obviously, Nagano are in the driver's seat. I mean, Iwate are coming off a game where they won 5-0. I mean, they beat Seretse's under-23s 5-0 away from home. So, I mean, it's not as if they're just mailing it in at the end of the season, but you'd have to think that Paseiro will do what they need to do in this game. I find it hard to imagine that it's not Nagano who finished second. I think Sagamihara have a decent chance of winning, because like they need it, but I don't think it. I think even if they win, it won't be enough, because I think Nagano. I think Nagano will win, and I think Nagano will be in J2 next year.
Mm-hmm. So anyone who's listening and wants to bet should definitely bet on Sagamihara after listening to this.
Well, if you wanted to be wild, put a cheeky amount on Gifu to overturn a big deficit, because they travel to, well, Gifu travel to Gamba under-23s, who had, shall we say, an eventful trip to Kagoshima United on Sunday. See, for the people that don't know, Gamba are actually 4-1 up after 55 minutes in this game, but they ended up losing 6-4. After a quite bizarre second half goal rush from Kagoshima United. Yeah, it was it's just one of those things that happens in J3. Something that I want to just pick up on is the fact that Gamba's under-23s only managed to field 3 substitutes in a game where they're allowed to field 7. And I think that's a very embarrassing situation for Gamba, for the league. It's just, and it smacks of Gamba under-23s not really caring about it. That's a bit harsh. It smacks of Gamba Osaka not really caring. The under-23s had to go out there, with 3 subs, and yeah, I think they only used one of the subs, to be quite frank, because, well, one of the subs was a goalkeeper, and they only had 2 outfield subs, so
winging it,
yeah, it's embarrassing. to be honest. I think it shows a little bit of disrespect to the league, and yeah, it's unfortunate really, but don't let that take the shine off Kagoshima winning 6-4, although it should be noted that it wasn't enough for to keep Kim Jong-song in a job, because Kagoshima United's manager was promptly released, or will be released at the end of this season, so they'll be under new management next year. But that's the quite the eventful game down in Kagoshima. In fact, it was a game that Frontale Rabbit was down there watching this game, because he wanted to watch Tabinus Jefferson, and I'm pretty sure he saw a lot of Tabinus Jefferson in the middle of that Gamba defense.
He should have taken his boots with him.
He might have got a game. I think he was. I think he was drinking too much shochu. I don't know if we can publish that, but
The only photos he's tweeting of these stadiums, like in the stadiums in soft focus, and a plastic cup of shochu, like got that hard, the hard focus in the foreground. So I think we're jealous.
That's what we are.
Incredibly jealous beyond belief. Got them drunk at football stadium for years. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Yeah, I don't know about Kagoshima, Stu, because they're only going to finish. Let's assume they win at the weekend in the last game, and Parcero win, Nagano win. Kagoshima are only going to finish 4 points off the automatic promotion places. So I don't know if that is necessarily such a disastrous season. So I think it's quite interesting that they're changing managers and who might come in instead.
I think it's probably a culmination, because he's been manager for 2 years. The first year they were relegated from J2, and the second year they failed to get promotion from J3. And so, whereas
he was on his last warning,
quite possibly. I mean, on the face of it, you're right, it doesn't look that bad. They could finish, I mean, if all the results go their way, they could only finish 1 point off the top, off the second promotion spot. But I think it's a culmination of things that they haven't really been considered for promotion. They've never been a promotion contender in my eyes. I can't remember if I ever spoke about them as being challenging for second place. And I think maybe that's the point here. I think that where the table doesn't lie, but it's there's context behind the table as well. And I think that Kim Jong-song is paying for getting relegated and also failing to kind of launch a promotion challenge.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Are there any other results or noteworthy events we should mention from the round 33 games?
Toyama were beaten at home by Imabari. They were beaten 3-1. Another goal for Leo Mineiro for Imabari. And he's... Katale Toyama's coach, Ryo Adachi, is another managerial casualty. He won't be managing them next year. They had a very disappointing season. I thought they'd be kind of much more involved in the promotion shakeup, but they just haven't. And he won't be there next year. Kaito Taniguchi continued his excellent goal scoring form. He scored another. He scored another goal for Rasa Kumamoto. He's going to finish as top goal scorer in the league. But whether that's enough for him to stay at Kumamoto, I don't know. I see him probably moving to pastures new. And that's probably about it from what we need to say for J3. I think like you've mentioned the big games between Nagano hosting Grusia Morioka, and Sagamihara traveling to Imabari. So it's all on those games for this final weekend.
Yeah, I think I'll perhaps just finish by just wholesale stealing a point from Gifu Richie. It's a shame that on Sunday we have the big J2 finale, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a midweek pod. In the J3 finale, but the kickoff times clash with each other, don't they? We have the J3 finale at 1 1 p.m. and then all of the J2 games kicking off at 2 o'clock, just, you know, at half time basically, in the all on Sunday. So yeah, I'm not really sure who made that decision. I think it was the same last year. It's probably the same every year, but yeah, it annoys me every year at this time that why can't we, even if it means J3 kicking off at 12, you know, so that we can focus on those games fully, and then have the kind of J2 finale. It'd be our very own Super Sunday, you know. But yeah, it is what it is, I guess. Yeah. All right, Stu. Well, thanks.
Did you forget you were hosting there?
I did. Yeah, I was stepping into the middle distance, thinking there's something I normally do about this time. What is it? Yeah. No, I was just wondering if there was any other business before we knock it on the head for this pod, Stu. Anything we should mention?
No, I think we've gone over all the important points and even the non-important points. So yeah, I think we should wrap it there.
Fair enough. Okay, well, we'll say as always, and thanks to all the listeners for downloading and letting us bring you up to speed with all the J2 and J3 goings on. It has been a long old season for everyone, I guess, listeners and podcasters included. So thanks for sticking with us. We really appreciate that, and we appreciate it if you're a patron as well and you back us financially. You know, that that gives us the strength to carry on when we're faced with endless midweek rounds with far too many goals in them. So yeah, we appreciate that, and yeah, hopefully, Stu, we can get together and wrap up some of these midweek J2 games later on this week. We'll have to wait to see if our schedules match, but yeah, for now I think that's all. So enjoy the midweek J2 games, and yeah, choose wisely at the weekend. You'll have to pick whether you want to follow the J2 or J3 finale, but enjoy the football, and yeah, we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.